NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, boxing analyst for DAZN, host of the Crossover Podcast, SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, and Inside the Paint on SI TV. Friend of the program. Remember, you can catch the Joshua Ruiz upset of the year on demand anytime on the sports streaming platform DAZN. You can see Chris Mannix calling the return of Triple G against Steve Rolls this Saturday, June 8th, also live on DAZN. My man, Chris Mannix. Chris, what's up? How you feeling?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Dude, I got to ask you, before we get into everything that happened, I'm great. Over the weekend, everything you covered, where are you right now, and what have the last 48 hours been like for you?
I'm resting comfortably back in Boston for a couple of days. They've been wild, you know, from the Ruiz fight, which we'll talk. And it's funny, I call it the Ruiz fight now. I mean, I never called it the Ruiz fight
right
at this moment to game two and everything that unfolded there. You know, but it picks up again this week. I mean, back in New York on Wednesday for Golovkin, and then on a flight on Sunday back to Toronto for game five.
You're killing it. Stay strong. Chris Mannix, my guest. All right, starting with Saturday night at MSG, for those who did not know going into that fight Saturday, exactly who was Andy Ruiz Jr. before the fight?
Hey, look, Andy Ruiz was a good fighter. You know, one of the things that bothers me in the aftermath was, you know, the butterbean-type comparisons and, you know, got beaten by some fat slob from, you know, a rough and rowdy competition. I mean, Andy Ruiz, for the last, you know, 8-9 years, was a very good prospect. Top Rank had him signed to their stable. They cut ties with him because it just wasn't working out. He wasn't as committed to training as they would have liked, but he's picked up working under Al Haymon, and, you know, he won a fight, what was it, you know, 6 weeks ago against Alexander Dimitrenko, a solid fringe contender, and he went into this fight a heavy underdog, but not someone that didn't at least have a pathway to potentially winning. Now that he's won, though, he has fulfilled all the promise that he showed at various times in past points of his career. I mean, he really went out and put on just one of the best performances as a huge underdog that I've ever seen.
Chris Mannix joining us. I was going to say, not only won, but how he won. Let's go back to that third round. When Joshua dropped Ruiz in the third round, what did you think was going to happen after that?
I thought it was over. And, you know, this is, you know, what you say in these broadcasts lives on forever. I think right after the knockdown, I said, and I'll paraphrase myself, but it was said, Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Everybody watch this. And, you know, like 10 seconds later, Anthony Joshua was on the canvas. And, I talked to Joshua in the ring afterwards and, you know, people in his team, and they didn't believe that Andy Ruiz could recover from that type of shot. Andy Ruiz had never been knocked down before. He took a brutal left hook, the kind of left hook that stunned Alexander Povetkin in Joshua's last fight in September. But Ruiz got up, he smiled, and he was okay. And Joshua went in there way too reckless. He went in there looking for the kill, and Ruiz was well enough to punch back. And when he did, he exposed the biggest flaw in Anthony Joshua's game, and that's his chin. He doesn't have a great heavyweight chin. And when he caught Joshua the first time, he discombobulated him and put him down two times in that round. I mean, Jim, that round, hands down, round of the year. I'm not sure that any round for the rest of this year can top what we saw on Saturday.
I'm going to say, Chris, that's one of the best rounds I've seen in several years. That was an amazing round. Chris Mannix joining us. You know, you answered my next question. I was going to say, Ruiz gets up, and he said after the fact that I'd never been knocked down before, and that got my attention, and then it made me hungrier. Joshua very clearly was not the same fighter after he got caught that same shot. Then you get Chris to the seventh round. Ruiz knocks Joshua down twice. What was the atmosphere like inside that building during that round?
Oh, it was it's amazing because I would say 80 to 85% of the crowd were either Brits who came over from the UK or, you know, Joshua supporters in the, you know, in the arena for the fight. So Ruiz goes down and the place just explodes. It's pandemonium in there as everyone expects a Joshua knockout to come. But when Ruiz countered and put Joshua down, you could just hear the sighs or the O's and the deflation really come out of the building. It was something to see and something to hear, you know, being there. I mean, there was so many, you know, it's kind of funny, like everybody in that arena was drunk at that point. I mean, that's just the way it went with the Joshua supporters. There's no worse way to lose a buzz than to see the guy you came to see fight go down in the way that Anthony Joshua went down. But this fight, Jim, was decided in the seventh round officially, but it was over after the third. Anthony Joshua did not recover after that third round.
It's one thing, Chris, to drive across town to see a fight like that. It's another to come across the pond to see a fight like that. Now, what about the sport overall? How big of a loss? We know it's a big loss for Joshua, obviously. How big of a loss? And I love Ruiz. I love the story. But how big of a loss is that for the sport of boxing overall?
Well, it's devastating in that we're not going to get the Wilder Joshua fight that we should have gotten. I mean, the politics of boxing, the greediness of some people in boxing prevented that Joshua and Wilder fight from happening this year anyway, regardless of what happened on Saturday night. But now that Joshua went down in the way that he did, it's never going to quite be what it was. We won't get two undefeated fighters against each other for heavyweight supremacy. Short term, I think it's good for the sport because, you know, if Joshua had won that fight in the third round, if Ruiz had not been able to recover, he would have gone on. He would have fought a mandatory against a guy named Kubrat Pulev, who nobody outside of the inner circle of boxing really knows who he is. It would have been overseas, and very few people would have watched it. Now, you're going to get the rematch in the U.K., and it's going to be an afternoon fight in the U.S., but everybody's going to watch it. I mean, as the build-up to that fight, it's going to be, can Andy Ruiz do it again, this time in front of, you know, 60 to 70,000 Brits in either O2 Arena or in Wembley Stadium. I'm not sure where that fight's going to take place, but it's going to be a raucous pro-Joshua crowd across the pond, and Andy Ruiz, this kind of aloof guy that doesn't seem affected by anything, is that going to carry over when he moves over to the UK? Now there's a buildup for that type of fight. So it's bitterly disappointing that we're not going to get Joshua Wilder as it was before Saturday night. But I think it creates even more excitement for Joshua's next fight against Ruiz in the fall.
Chris Mannix joining us for a few more moments. All right, so why don't we quickly shift to Toronto. Golden State Warriors, Chris, have had some really important games over the past few years against the Thunder, against the Rockets. But those have been late in the series. How huge was last night's game two and for them to avoid going down 0-2?
Yeah, I can't remember a time when there was that much urgency for Golden State to win a game two and to even a series and not fall behind two games to none. I mean, they needed to win that one. I mean, Toronto's no joke. I mean, we know that by now. And they go up 2-0. I find it hard to believe that the Warriors, who are without Kevin Durant for I don't know how long, I mean, it's yeah, you see reports about Kevin Durant coming back at some point midway through the series. At this point, you're wondering, even if he does come back, what's he going to look like and how much is he going to be able to give them, given the significance of that injury? So they had to win that game. It became even more important when you saw Klay Thompson come up lame with that hamstring injury. And, you know, Klay has vowed he's going to play in game three, but I don't know, man. I mean, hamstring injuries are the real deal. And if he couldn't come back after that, I wonder what it's going to look like and feel like sometime today, 24 hours after it's passed. But it was critical. And I think we saw, Jim, a different side of the Warriors. I mean, we've seen Golden State bury you in three-pointers, whether it's Durant or Curry or Thompson. This was different. This was, you know, 33 assists on 37 shots, 22 assists in the second half. All their buckets in the second half came off assists. This was mid-range jump shots. Iguodala, Curry going to the basket, Draymond Green going for 17. They showed, you know, a little bit of the diversity of their offensive game in the second half of that one. And I think that will at least give the guys that are playing some confidence going into game three. But I don't look at this series as being over by any stretch. I think this is still a coin flip type of series, given what the kind of injuries Golden State's dealing with.
Yeah, Chris, my point was, because of that, and because I have so much respect for Toronto, that was a gut-wrenching loss for Toronto. But as I mentioned, that series was not over after game one. It's also not over after game two. The one guy you and I have not talked about is DeMarcus Cousins. Now, I really thought it was just too big of an ask. I mean, nothing against Boogie, but he had two pretty significant injuries. Watching his 8 minutes in game one, Chris, I thought he's just not going to be a factor. So how do you explain what he was able to do in 28 minutes last night and the impact that he had on both ends?
Yeah, he controlled the defensive glass, 10 rebounds, 9 of them on the defensive end. They needed it because there were a lot of long rebounds popping up there from those Toronto jump shots. And, you know, that without Kevin Looney in the second half, with him dealing with that shoulder injury or chest injury, whatever it is, they needed him to go out there and play. And that was, I mean, DeMarcus Cousins went from a luxury to a necessity in the span of like 12 minutes. I mean, they had to have him out there. It's nice having Andrew Bogut, but they needed Cousins and what he brings, you know, passing offensively. I thought he was excellent at moving the basketball on that end, and defensively coming down with rebounds. I think Toronto, if Looney winds up missing any significant time, Toronto's got to find a way to exploit him. I mean, they've got to find a way to go at Cousins in that pick and roll. I mean, we saw how Houston did it a couple of times in the regular season and in other games. You've got to go at DeMarcus Cousins and make him defend off the dribble against your guards, or else he is going to be too big an asset for them on the other end of the floor.
Oh, there's no doubt they'll do that or try to do that to him. Chris, one last thought. I got to mention Draymond Green because he's such a polarizing figure among some fans. But when you consider the fact that he was one assist away from his fourth straight triple-double and what he's doing on the defensive end, what do you make of how well he's played, especially since Kevin Durant went down?
I just think that he's been asked to step into a bigger role, and it's a role that he has been craving and wanted, and he stepped into it and has done an excellent job. I mean, he had the triple-double in game one, but he was kind of laughed at after that. I mean, he's one of the weaker triple-doubles, people said, and, you know, they look at him as this great defensive player, and Pascal Siakam just went off. I think Draymond, you know, I think he took that personally, and I think he took the challenge even more personally of taking on Siakam and shutting him down. They did. I mean, Siakam was 5-18 in that game, 12 points. Draymond was everywhere, had some good defensive possessions against Kawhi Leonard. You know, the triple-double numbers are great, but when Draymond is out there forcing his opponents to shoot low percentages in the way that Siakam did and forcing Kawhi Leonard to work extra hard when he's matched up with Draymond, he's doing his job. I mean, everything else offensively is really just gravy to me. When he's able to do that defensively and be such a force like he was in Game 2, he's such a major asset for Golden State. I think over the course of the last few seasons, Jim, I think we've kind of forgotten just how good this guy is. I mean, he may not be, and scouts will tell me, that they don't see him as a guy that can defend threes and fives in the same way that he used to. But when he's matched up with fours, even those kind of springy fours like Pascal Siakam has morphed into, he is still extremely, extremely good. And we saw that in Game 2 the other night.
I think the guy literally reinvented himself on the run when he lost all that weight. And to your point about him taking it personally, Chris, I think he does. I think he takes everything personally, and I think all the great ones do. Remember, you can catch the Joshua Ruiz Upset of the Year on demand anytime on the sports streaming platform DAZN. And you want to make sure you check out Chris Mannix calling the return of Triple G is Saturday, June 8th, which is also live on DAZN. My man, I know you got to rest and recover. But again, Chris, you sound great. I'm proud of you. Stay on it, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Jim. Anytime.
You got it, bud. Chris Mannix, he is grinding it out and doing great work.